Hi, and welcome everyone to the 136th episode of CM Rocks. Today we have Yannick Reckmans from Cubix to talk to us about Dual Right. I forgot to ask you how your last name is pronounced, Yannick.
Well, hi, first of all. So my last name would be in Dutch, it would be Yannick Reckmans.
Reckmans, yeah.
Reckmans, yes. So you did pretty well with you went with the German version of it, which is the best way of doing it, for sure. the English don't do it very well. I don't like the English version of it. So okay. German is okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, Reckman.
Yeah, exactly. It could be better.
Yeah.
So it's me, Marcus Erlandsson, and you heard Malin Matnes. Welcome, Malin, as well.
Thank you. You can always tell where I am by my laugh. You will almost hear me before you see me.
Nice. So what's your marketing minute today, Malin?
Well, there's about time for a new release for customer insights. So a couple of things are gonna come out then. But one of the things that I absolutely love that is finally getting general availability is the easily referenced copies of sent emails in the timeline. So yeah, that you can see the exact copies that you have sent to your customers in the timeline. So every personalization and every conditional content and everything that is different and weird about each send, you will find it the perfect replica of that in the timeline for the customer. So finally, nice. General availability on that one.
Yeah, a small yay for that one.
Can I say that it sounds like something that should have been there in version one of this product? I don't really work a lot with marketing, but...
You just complain a lot about it.
Yeah,
I know.
To be able to tell what you've sent to your customer, yeah, I could be pretty good.
you could have always seen the email, but every specialization, every person that was a high first name... And all, because you can do conditional content. So if you're interested in SharePoint or Dataverse, you could get information about Dataverse first, because that's best, right? And then you go on to get SharePoint information. So what exact copy that is and all the niche things that makes it better, because there are too many emails being sent. And let's be fair, you don't read a lot of them because they're not that good. So if you get more conditional content, then it's more customized to you and your needs and your wants, and that will make it a better email. So more people will hopefully read it.
Yeah. And to everyone who's listening, you've heard Yannick Reckmans, but let's formally introduce him. Yannick is a Microsoft Dynamics, a Microsoft 365 and Business Applications MVP. Was born and raised in SharePoint, starting his career in 2011 when SharePoint 2010 was still new and shiny. Then changing reality of the cloud made him expand his knowledge to the whole of Microsoft 365, Azure, and Power Platform.
Well, that's getting a long intro if you're going to read everything. But yes, this is my background. Yes, I started about 12 years ago in Microsoft Cloud. Out of school, my choice was to either go into ECM, Enterprise Content Management, or into BI, Business Intelligence. And I did two job interviews, and the one with BI sucked so bad that I went to ECM. I had no clue about either of them, because who teaches that in school? So this is how I ended up in Enterprise Content Management on SharePoint.
Yeah.
And in 12 years, things changed and updated and whatever, and now I run my own company and we're in business applications, so no longer in enterprise content management.
But you still don't do BI.
No, I still don't do BI. Exactly. It's not because Microsoft forces a product with Power in its name into the Power Platform that I have to do Power BI. They moved it out of there more or less again with this whole Fabric and OneLake thingy. So I'm glad we didn't invest in it.
So that one interview 12 years ago, that was life-changing.
Life-changing, spot on.
Nice. So I just want to finish up with, he always asks the important questions. Where is the coffee?
Yes. A good question. Without coffee, no. Yeah, nothing happens. It's the first thing in the morning. There has to be coffee. I'll be very, very grumpy. Mullen has met me in the morning. Without coffee, there, nothing happens. That's just it. And I'm a developer at heart. Wait,
there's a difference?
Oh, yes. There is a difference. You just be lucky that you only met me after my first coffee. Yeah.
So you're turning coffee into working solutions. Is that it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
All right, then. So SharePoint or Dynamics?
Well, it's an unfair question.
Yes.
And you both know that, and yet you still put it in the show. It's an unfair question. My first love, of course, is SharePoint. That's where I started 12 years ago. And SharePoint gets a lot of shit from everyone, and some rightfully so, some not really. If you use SharePoint for what it's meant for in document management, in collaboration, document collaboration, and potentially for portals or internal portals and internal communication, it can be an amazing product. If, like 10 years ago, you build CRM systems on top of SharePoint because customers have a SharePoint license and not a CRM license, then life will be very difficult for you. If you use this product for what it's meant for, SharePoint can be an amazing thing. Same goes for Dynamics. Dynamics is not meant for document collaboration. Yeah. Yet, how many people try to stuff all their documents inside Dataverse and then complain about file storage being so big and so expensive? Yeah, there's another product for that. So to each their own, and both have a reason to exist. But to be clear, the last 6 years since I run my company, most of my money or the money we make comes from business applications doing Dataverse, Power Platform, and Dynamics 365 implementations, of course. Yeah. Pretty sure there's more money to be made in that area than in enterprise content management currently. But okay, we'll see.
SharePoint was hugely successful and was so for a reason. So yeah, I wouldn't complain. It's just, it's fun. Yeah.
Yes, and the product evolved over time in such a way that when I started in 2010, we got 2013, 2016, there was a lot of evolution and it required lots of consultancy. But as you can see with business applications as well, lots of the new functionality is out of the box, ready and properly documented, which is kudos to Microsoft. They evolved as well, but it also means that this system requires less consultants, less, like, for smaller companies, SharePoint can just work without too much guidance. I agree, for bigger companies with a bigger enterprise architecture and information architecture, you need consultants and all of that. But just your small, medium-sized business with 50 to 100 people can spin up a SharePoint communication site and click something together, and it can be enough. It doesn't require 100-day project. I know some SharePoint consultants will not like that at this point, but this is my opinion. Yes, you can develop a lot on SharePoint, but out of the box, what's available is already pretty good and pretty user-friendly. And business applications just requires way more in development and application building. And there's more fun in that for us as an ISV or an SI, essentially. To do.
And since we all use Microsoft Teams nowadays, we're pretty much stuck with SharePoint as well. So yeah, it's good that we know a bit about it, enough to not make a mess directly.
Yeah, and it's one of the funny things with Microsoft Teams is because it's a layer in front of SharePoint, lots of the things we used to do in SharePoint are not exposed in Teams. Teams simplifies the SharePoint interface. So all of the fancy stuff you could do before in SharePoint, you can still do.
Yeah.
But users interact with their documents through Teams much more than through SharePoint. So all of the fancy stuff is, they don't even see it, unfortunately. So, yeah.
All right.
very true. But I some time ago, which event was this? Last we talked about dual rights and your headache and
I don't know which. I've been complaining about dual right, or like not necessarily complaining, but it's dual right has been in my project for the last 2 years now, more or less, 18 months, 24 months, yes. And it's been a very interesting process to get through dual right, given that I have zero knowledge about ERP systems and Dynamics finance and operations. And then I had to do some dual right stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I remember 10 years ago, I was on a project that was doing the integration, out-of-the-box integration between Dataverse and Finance Operations or AX or Acceptas or whatever it was called back in the days. And I remember sitting with the developer from F&O going through each table and each column or field as it was then, looking at what is it, how is it, what type is it. If it wasn't the same type, well, that's why the integration didn't work. So we needed to change that. Okay, so what does that mean on the F&O side? Oh, we can't change it there because it's crucial. Okay, so we need to change it on the Dataverse side. Okay, so we need to redo all of that. Damn it. And it was just months of going through field by field by field.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
All right, so let's back up a bit and ask, okay, what's dual right? Why do we have it? What are we trying to achieve by having dual right?
Will you explain or shall I? it's also a bit of personal interpretation, of course, why dual right exists or why you should use it. In if you look at documentation of Microsoft, why dual right exists is a way to integrate your F&O, your finance and operations systems with Dataverse. Get data from Dataverse into finance and operations, get data from finance and operations into Dataverse in a dual right fashion, which means if you make an update on one side, it will update on the other system in near real time. And this is important. It's not real time, it's near real time. This is literally that way in the documentation. But the important part of it is that it happens in transaction. And this is why dual write is fun and useful, is if you make changes on that data on the Dataverse side, and it will be immediately updated on the F&O side. But if the data that's being updated or sent to F&O does not adhere to the business rules or the process rules of the F&O process or the F&O like guidelines, it will not save in either systems. You will get the error message on the Dataverse side. Like the system that makes the update will show the error message coming from the remote system. And this is crucial in keeping very business critical ERP data in sync and adhering to all the business rules that are set up in either system. Yeah. So this is what dual write does. Make sure that the data from one system lives into the other, and it's essentially copied over. So the data exists in two places, and it will make sure that it gets written in the two databases at the same time.
Okay, so that doesn't sound too complex.
Exactly. This is what I thought 24 months ago when we started this project. How difficult can it be? There is a out-of-the-box system that's driven by F&O to synchronize data in two ways. And you can even decide if some of the data is only one way and some of the data is not synced. Like, you can set it up yourself. And on top of that, Microsoft provides out-of-the-box mappings between F&O and Dataverse. And if tables do not exist on the Dataverse side, no worries, you'll import some solution and the tables are there, like created according to Microsoft standards and ready to be integrated with F&O. Yes. Yeah. Sounds wonderful and easy. Yeah, and this is where all the trouble starts. The trouble starts there because it's so badly documented that They did their best in providing out-of-the-box solutions for mappings and tables, and they segregated them by application on Dataverse side. So there is a Dataverse mapping solution for Duo, right? For sales, one for customer service, one for project. But it does not explain what it maps for each of those applications. So you have the solutions, but you do not have any idea or documentation on which fields maps to where. On top of that, there's also the global address book solution, which is a disaster because FNO has this party concept. And if you're not familiar with FNO, it's very difficult, but essentially a party...
You get an address, you get an address, you get
yes,
an address.
Everyone gets an address. So it's... Party is company agnostic. Like in FNO, you can do multiple companies. You can, they're called legal entities there. And a company or like a client, a customer can exist in multiple of those legal entities. Like the one legal entity can work with the same customer as the other legal entity. That's amazing. But they're split up between the legal entities, but they have a party as a parent, essentially. The parent party does not belong to a specific legal entity. And then there are addresses for companies, for customers. Those addresses can only be for a customer within one legal entity, or they could be shared with the parties. And then all of that makes the data model of FNO very, very complex. And it's an amazing data model for ERP. Hmm. Unfortunately, as soon as you move to Dataverse, nothing of this exists. We have accounts and contacts. Parties, legal entities, multi-company, nothing like that exists. So you get a solution from Microsoft that gives you tables for party and party postal address collection and all of that, which is super funny because none of these tables are named the same way as the tables in FNO. So you have no clue which table you get on the Dataverse side that maps to the table on FNO side. If you have no clue how this works, because I only do Dataverse, I have zero knowledge about FNO. This is a hunt. This is needle in a haystack. This is what Mullen described before. You've got your FNO guy that has zero knowledge about Dataverse, and you've got your Dataverse guy that has zero knowledge about FNO, and you've got zero documentation. And then you're trying to figure out how all of this maps together.
Yeah.
And it's not just tables and mappings that are provided by Microsoft. There are also a gazillion amount of Dataverse plugins that are provided. Some of these plugins are provided to move data. Like they are responsible for on pre-operation or post-operation on the Dataverse side to synchronize the data from Dataverse into FNO. Some of these plugins are created specifically to make sure that data that's updated in one table in Dataverse, because we have a very simple one table model, has to be replicated to five other hidden tables to make sure that it works with the field mapping to get it dual right mapped into FNO. None of this is documented anywhere. And with the recent change on, well, not so recent, but with the change on plugins that are provided by Microsoft that you cannot disable them anymore in the plugin toolbox, as well as some of them are hidden, you don't even have a clue that they exist on your system, that they are being installed when you install all the data to do all right solutions. So it's like digging. You have to map out everything that exists. And I can assure you that after 16 months of doing that, you start questioning why you haven't built every of those mappings yourself. Like why you didn't build every table yourself and created every data mapping field from this field in FNO to that field in Dataverse on your own.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like every single time we ran this synchronization, there is something new that pops up that we haven't found. And this has been my life for the last 2 years, essentially.
I mean, it kind of hurts to hear that nothing has changed in 10 years.
Well, I assume some things have changed with Duo, right? Yeah. I think in terms of performance, a lot has changed in terms of, and this is also because I've been renting now for minutes about all this whole thing, how it was a challenge. But I do believe it's wonderful technology. Like, if they would get their act together and document every single one of those plugins and functionality and what it does, and you could read up front about what you're getting into, what you're getting out of the box, this could be a very good solution. The problem why everyone is complaining is about the fact that it seems one way out of documentation and the way that they present it, and it doesn't take 2 hours and you get so badly hurt that you're emotionally damaged and you don't ever want to touch this technology anymore. And that's where the problem is. Yeah. So has nothing changed? No, I don't think so. I do think lots has changed,
yeah.
Except for the fact that the barrier of entry into DualWrite is still gigantic. That's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've touched it twice. So one was 10 years ago when it just hurt. And then it was probably about 7 years ago. I went to a DualWrite training with actually the first time I met Julian Sharp. So it's a while ago. And every time I mentioned this training to Julian, he's like, oh, that's still the worst training I've ever had. So it was 2 days, and the first day, nothing worked. Like, we got IP blocked at the Microsoft offices, and absolutely nothing worked. So we just like, okay, let's just call it a day and go home early. And the next day, my kid was sick, so I didn't get to go there. Well, so, yeah.
It is one of the challenges with DualWrite, in my opinion, is the fact that there is not a lot of guidance from Microsoft or good guidance from Microsoft. Combine that with everyone has to figure it out by themselves. And with DualWrite, I feel like we're back in 2011 when SharePoint 2010 came out, and the way that we figured out stuff was by decompiling DLLs, because that was on-prem. So we decompiled DLLs and figured out how Microsoft was doing it internally. And this is how I feel with DualWrite every time that I have to figure out what they do. It's like, let's install it on a clean system, see if how it behaves when there's no customization. Does it do the same thing? Have we screwed up? Have they screwed up? Is it an update? Because the fun part about DualWrite solutions as well is they get updated every single month, and there is release notes of them, which are essentially better than their main documentation. There's release notes. I just scrolled through release notes today, and it said something like, we changed this, and previously it was doing this, and the previously it was doing this was nowhere documented before. Like, I have to learn from the release notes that you changed the behavior of something that you have never explained to me in the first place, that this was the original behavior. That's the struggle with this whole thing. Like, their current documentation, when they change something, is rather okay. The fact is that the core documentation is not that good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is fun because we officially launched this application, I think, a month and a half ago, and after almost 2 years, it works amazingly. Like, it does what it has to do. The only thing is that it has a major overrun. It costs so much more money than it was supposed to, and not necessarily just because of DualWrite. Let me get that out of the way. It was a factor in the whole thing, but it's also once it's implemented and it does its thing, it's kind of a magical solution, because we can build now, and we have now an application that's business process flow driven. We can build stuff on the Dataverse side that we could never ever build on the FNO side. And when we feel like it, we send the data back into FNO. Like, we could do a whole business process flow on updating, changing some information, and only when we feel like it, it gets back into FNO, where the final data, the final thing for invoicing for ERP has to be there. But the whole process to change it, to go through it, to make adjustment to it, we can have in Dataverse in a model-driven app. And it works incredibly well. Only the process to get there is very, very challenging.
Painful.
Yeah, it's painful. It's and one of the challenges is that there's no one in the world that understands both of them. And or maybe there is, but I haven't found them yet. These are vastly different technologies.
Oh, yeah.
That finding a F&O finance consultant that understands Dataverse and Power Platform is rare. Same goes the other way around. And then having that one person that understands both systems also have understand dual write, that's like, meh, I don't know. You're asking a lot now of this one consultant or this one person. And that's the thing. It's so, so different technologies. It's so different use cases that someone understanding both of them deep enough to also understand dual write and make this work, it's challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So would you do it again? Or do you want another dual write project?
Well, it made me a lot of money.
So that's
one thing. I'm not sure. I wonder. On one hand, I'm curious. Like, I'm sure both of you have the same thing. You went through a painful project. You learned so much. In the back of your mind, you're a tiny little bit curious that if you could do a similar project again, that you could do it better, that all the learnings can be applied, and that you will not fall into the same problems or challenges or anything. Do I want it today? Not really. Potentially wait another 6 to 12 months before I do this again. I'm very happy that currently this is over. I'm very happy with my learnings, but I can do without a dual write project for a while. Yes.
But to try to back up. So this is something that you set up in lifecycle services on the finance and operations side. So if you have like a blank system, or a blank integration, you have nothing there and you want to start something. So then you start to import these solutions, or you could, as you said, set it up by yourself. And then you start with the mappings, this table, this column, this or that.
Yeah. So it all starts currently on the lifecycle services. So because they updated it. And essentially, you start on...
For the Dataverse people who might not know what Lifecycle Services is.
Lifecycle Services is the admin center for finance and operations.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of at the end of its lifecycle, which is funny by itself. But essentially, Lifecycle Services is the admin center for finance and operations. It's a place where you manage your finance and operations environments. And this is where everything starts. Essentially, it starts there to start your finance or operations environment. Then you have to connect it to a Dataverse environment. You have to do the Power Platform connection wizard type of thing. And this is where you set up the connection between your F&O environment and the Dataverse environment. And it's a one-to-one link. Essentially, it's a very hard fixed connection between both environments. You can only have one F&O system linking to one Dataverse environment and the other way around, which is also something from an architectural standpoint to remember, because that changed during the lifecycle of our current project. Before, you could make a disconnect and reconnect your F&O system to a different Power Platform environment. That's done now. So they changed that. We were not very aware of that, but okay. So that that made things, that changed things. For sure. And when the connection is set up, you go into F&O. You go in, the rest of your setup does not happen in lifecycle services. It happens in F&O, essentially. And in F&O, you have your dual write setup where you create your mappings. And you can create custom mappings, which essentially just means you have a list of your tables in Dataverse and a list of your tables in F&O, and you say, I want to synchronize things from this one table in Dataverse to this one table in F&O. And when you have your source and your target, you get the fields from source and target, and then you just say, this field goes into that field from Dataverse into F&O. You can set up if it's a two-way sync, one-way sync, and which direction it is. They call it one-way and bi-directional, I think. You can even hard code syncing. Like if you have a field in Dataverse that has to be filled by FNO with a specific value, you can say that it will always be filled with this specific value. So it's a hard coded thing. You can put up filters saying that if it flows from Dataverse into FNO, it can only flow, like the actual update only triggers when this filter is valid. So you could say, this is what we do, for example. We have a field that's like approved for syncing. This is what our business process flow does. And as soon as it gets through the flow and that field is set to true, only then all the values will be moved over into FNO. You could do the other way around. You can filtering from FNO say, we only want customers with a estimated revenue over whatever amount of money to be flown, like synchronized back into Dataverse. So all of that you can set up. This will create, and this is funny because you do all of this work on the FNO side of things and you think we're done. Now I want to move all of these mappings from my dev environment into test or into production.
Yeah.
Now, because that's normal. You have set it up in one environment, you want to take the mappings to the other place. And you have set this up in FNO. So my assumption was, there's some way in FNO that I can export this and have this. Well, this is not how it works.
Yay.
Surprise, surprise. It creates dual write files, components, whatever you want to name it, inside Dataverse, inside the default solution. It's all unmanaged. So you can create a solution, and then you can do the dual write mapping files, and you can put them in the solution. So if you want them on your FNO test environment, you will have to export it from Dataverse as a solution and import it on the test Dataverse, which then you can go into the connected FNO experience and find the mapping files again, which you can then import. It's a whole weird thing. And giving this disconnect where some of the responsibilities are in FNO, some of the responsibilities are in Dataverse, it's also, this is one of our problems, it leads to a communication challenge. Because who owns this integration? Who is responsible for this? Who needs to figure this out? And of course, it's a joint responsibility, a shared responsibility. But my feeling always was, this is FNO technology. I don't understand it, for sure. But it's also super difficult for me to learn this because I don't know FNO. Now, apparently on the other side, they had exactly the same feeling. So we had to come to this point where we shared this, like say this, like we struggle. Both of us are struggling. Let's try and struggle together. And what you have in knowledge and what I have in knowledge, let's see if we can make this work or do this. And once we got to that point, we made a lot of progress. And one of the things that it's one of my recommendations, if you start with dual write, especially if you start with the solutions that Microsoft provides with the out-of-the-box fields, tables, and mappings, please, please, please set up a vanilla FNO on an empty Dataverse and just see how this works out of the box, how Microsoft intended it. You will find things you like. You will find things you dislike, for sure. But at least you know how it's meant to work. Because I firmly believe that dual write is rarely something that is done on day one of an ERP FNO implementation, which means that rarely you get to implement this on a vanilla system that behaves the way that Microsoft intended it to behave. And as a result, you're struggling and you question yourself always. It's easy to blame Microsoft, but potentially one of your customizations on either Dataverse or FNO has failed or ruined this or interfered or whatever. Or I was stupid and I did something wrong in the configuration. Could always be, but it's super difficult to troubleshoot if you have no baseline. So I can only recommend for everyone that wants to go into dual write, make sure you have this baseline with a vanilla system, plain, nothing customized, just out of the box. Drop it all there. It's worth its time and money to figure this out in the default way, for sure.
Yeah.
So
Good.
I think that's my biggest learning of this whole project. We thought it would be simple, yet our system was so customized that we had no clue what was the root cause of our problems.
Yeah. And we haven't discussed any of the sort of usual problems that I have when I integrate it. That's like currencies, units, teams, business units, all of those fun stuff in Dataverse. So you're smiling now. Should we stop or am I just...
Well, I see the recording going. I see the recording going for 39 minutes, and I complained about the or shared the challenges with the actual dual write implementation and the technology. And now you want to open this up with business units and companies and roles and all of that. That's a whole other discussion. And yes, you're right.
The next episode.
There's so much planning that needs to happen before, like who will own the table? Is it organization owned? Is it teams owned, or is it business unit owned, or whatever? What's your owning model? What's your how will the data be in there? Which account will sync it? There's a whole thing going on, and unfortunately, most of this is something that you only figure out by trial and error. And this is where I recommend again your vanilla plain system to see how it behaves, because only then you can make this decision. Unfortunately, and all the tables that are not legal entity specific, they are easy because they are shared across the company. But those that contain data that are specific for a specific legal entity, this is where business units come in. This is where that security model comes in. And we were lucky in that sense that for our customer, the people working in the system could see all the data from all the business units. So we didn't have to... It's a problem that was less an issue to resolve. But this becomes an issue if you have... Malin can only see for this specific legal entity all the data, and I can only see for another legal entity, and you can see both of them. And do we need to reorganize the business unit strategy? Because that's another fun thing with dual write. Every legal entity that's defined in FNO will result in a business unit in Dataverse. So you can apply the business unit security model and segregation. But the fun thing is that there's no hierarchy. So every legal entity will be directly underneath the root business unit in Power Platform. And then you can reorganize them, like you can reparent them and you can restructure them. And it keeps working, but it requires lots of thinking because potentially you want some business unit that has people that can view data from the two childs. But then you have to make sure that they have to be reorganized, and you have to do the whole security model on the Dataverse side again. So yes, to your remark. Does it stop there? No. Lots of stuff that has to happen. And all of this with currencies is the same thing. But also the thing, there's a lock on editing and performance, for example. If you have a whole lot of records in your system, performance is challenging. One of the things, for example, is because of the party model. Remember, you have one party which could have multiple customers. In my client, we had 65 legal entities. 65, which is okay. It's doable. But if you have a party, which is cross, then you have a customer that exists in all 65 legal entities, and that customer is not only a customer, but also a supplier. That means that you have every party, one party, has one customer record and one supplier record in every one of these legal entities. As a result, we had 112 of these. And the way that FNO is set up is that some of the fields are shared, which means that if you are in a customer in a specific legal entity and you change the name of that customer, you're not changing the name of the customer, essentially, you're changing the name of the party. And by changing the name of the party, it changes them in all the other 111 instances of that party. And the way that FNO has implemented this is very performant efficient. So as long as you do not have dual write, this is in an instance, it's boom done. The problem is because, remember, I said we do not have the party model in Dataverse and it's not really optimized there. There are plugins on the Dataverse side that if a customer, one of the 112, is updated, there is a plugin that will make sure that the party is updated. And by updating the party name, there's a plugin that will make sure that all the associated 111 remaining customers and suppliers are updating. And remember what I said about stuff being in transaction? So this all happens before the saving screen at FNO side stops spinning. Like there's a spinning, saving. All of these actions on the Dataverse side have to happen before the saving operations on FNO ends. And this is interesting because on top of the plugins of Microsoft, of course, we have created our plugins. Not all of them were very performant. So add a long-running plugin from Microsoft and some additional plugins on our end, and a plugin execution limitation of 2 minutes in the Dataverse sandbox, and you have a lot of failed saving operations happening in on the FNO side. So all of these challenges are coming up. And then you have to do plugin tracing and figure out which of the plugins are at fault. And then you see that plugins from Microsoft are already taking 1 minute and 40 seconds, so which means that your own plugin have to finish somewhere in the 15-second range because otherwise you're already out of bounds of the plugin sandbox and they're eating up everything. On other instances, our plugins were the ones that are slow in comparison. And the end user is the one that suffers on both ends.
Yeah.
Because they are waiting for a saving operation that takes ages because it has to happen in two systems and takes super, super long. So yeah, lots and lots of things to consider when you build this. It's not as straightforward as you think, even though the integration framework comes from Microsoft and is out of the box in the system, there is a lot of things to consider.
Yeah, so you kind of have to be one FNO person, one Dataverse person, and an architect to oversee it all, and a developer.
Yes.
And that find the unicorn, the one person who knows it all and you will write. Then you're good to go.
Yeah. If you find that one, that's the one that I want to hire. So send them my way. But no, the challenge there is that I think you're totally correct. Where I feel like we started this with the idea that the FNO person could do this. Like the tables are there. It can't be that difficult. It ended up with an FNO developer consultant having lots and lots of conversations with a Dataverse consultant, leading to communication troubles because the terminology on either side is different. So that's different, that's challenging, each coming from their own system, talking about their own experience. We have had things being developed that were not necessary because of the way that it was phrased from one end to the other end, and misinterpreted. And this is what you said, like the architect person that oversees it all, but it doesn't have to be an architect. It's just a smart person that goes like, you're saying this and you're saying that, and it sounds the same, although you're using different words to express the same thing. Could it be that you mean the same thing? Like this whole five-year-old type of thing. Like I hear you say something and I hear you say something and it sounds so similar, yet you're saying so many different words.
Yeah. It's like you need an interpreter.
Exactly.
Yeah, to be like the, okay, so is this not the same thing? Are you, so maybe you should have someone who doesn't know either system.
but it's just like, I don't know, smart. You don't have to know, like you say this and you say that, I know either system, but this, like from someone looking from the outside, it seems like super likely that you're talking about the same thing. Could it be that you're talking about the same thing?
Yeah.
Like bring them closer together. It's, I don't know, a therapist or a, I don't know. This is a situation where an interpreter, a therapist, someone that could understand what one side is saying and relate it to another technology or another system or anything to make it flow better. And once we got to that point, we made tremendous progress in this project. So it's just a it's a realities, I think.
Yeah, and it's never a one person project.
No, I don't believe that. It could be if you find your unicorn potentially, but I don't think it. I don't think they exist. Or they could be. Maybe there's someone listening to your podcast that goes like, but I'm that unicorn.
Contact us, and if you're looking for a job, then Yannick will hire you.
Well, if there's someone feeling like this, I've been talking about dual ride so much in the last 2 years with people, and most of the consultants I talk to go like, we're not touching this anymore because of we cannot make it work. Like, do the translation. So if there's someone that feels like I could do this, but is currently not making their job out of it, I can bring you in contact with at least 10 people that would that would hire you, even if it wouldn't be me. There are so many projects out there that could use such a person with dual ride, especially with the, like I alluded to it, with lifecycle services going away, being at the end, like F&O is being more and more integrated into Power Platform. It's my opinion that dual ride and virtual tables, we have not discussed that, but that's a whole different episode, will play a very, very big role in that bringing F&O closer into Power Platform story that Microsoft is slowly pushing and getting to. And I think they're having an overrun of 3 years, so my project of 2 years is not that bad to make that work. But dual ride is here to stay, in my opinion. It's not; it will not go away, and it will become more and more important because building the customizations on the F&O side is hard. They also have their own development language. Really enough, why all ERP softwares do that, I have no clue. We build our plugins on Dataverse side in C#, but like F&O has their own, Business Central has their own, SAP has their own, Salesforce has their own. For some reason, they all invent their own programming language, but it makes it difficult. They don't find any developers either. They have to train them. So the story of Microsoft is that more extensibility for F&O will happen on the Dataverse side. And to get that to work, you have to have the F&O data there. And then we're all back in the beginning, and then you need dual ride and virtual tables. So there is a big market for people like that, that have that understanding on both systems, to make a good amount of career out of it.
So if you're wondering or considering, I don't know where to go in this world, I don't know what to do with my career, I have no idea, then if you, I almost said, if you like pain, then go dual ride. You'll be paid.
Well, and this is where, yes, but also, if you have a history in either F&O or Dataverse and you do this, there is a career path in dual ride. I strongly believe that, but it's probably not something that you can do just on day one. It will take you a long, long, long time to learn this, unfortunately.
I mean, especially if you do it for 2 years and then you want to not touch it for a year. And
it's what emotional damage does to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably going to regret this, but it sounded like the mapping was done on Dataverse side as an unmanaged customization.
Well, it's essentially yes and no. It behaves the same way as any customization that you do in Dataverse side. So in the environment that you originally customize your or set up your mappings, it will create the mapping component just like it would create a field or a web resource or a table as that unmanaged component, which you can then export managed, which is the idea. You export it managed, and then you import it into the test Dataverse environment as a managed solution. And then you synchronize it into F&O, and then you have your mapping files that you shouldn't be tweaking anymore. The interesting part there is that exactly the way as you can still do in production on Dataverse components. You can create an unmanaged layer on top of it. If you go into production, FNO, and you make a change on the mappings, it will tell you that it cannot make the change in the current mapping file because that's a managed mapping file, mapping component.
Yeah.
But if you want, we can create an unmanaged one in production for you to have this. So you could still do that. The behavior isn't different. What is different or what is interesting about this is that for all the other components or things that you build in Dataverse, the building part is done in Dataverse too. Whereas for the dual write mappings, it's done on the FNO side, which will then write a component in your Dataverse environment database, essentially components database.
Yeah.
Does that mean that if you've blocked unmanaged customization, it will fail?
Well, the question is if that's bad. It will. And it all depends on what will fail. You should never block unmanaged customizations in your development environment because inherently everything is. Then you cannot work.
No.
You should block unmanaged customizations in your test acceptance and production environment. Great. That also means that on that point, and this is where the challenge starts, most of those ERP systems only have proper data to try out your mappings in a acceptance and test or production environment, not in dev environment. You don't want all of your ERP business critical data in a dev environment. So if you block unmanaged customizations, it does mean that you cannot create new mapping files or new mapping configurations in a test acceptance or production environment, because it will always create that as an unmanaged component inside Dataverse. And if you don't allow unmanaged stuff with the new toggle, then you can't do that. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Depends. Who you are.
Yeah. It depends on who you are and how you set it up.
Yeah.
I think it should be a good thing. Reality dictates that in some cases you will have to allow unmanaged customizations to make sure that you can create the mappings that the way you want it, that you can test it the way that they work, and then afterwards you can still block it again. Because no one should be tweaking mappings directly in production without them going through a pipeline, like going from dev to test to acceptance to production.
Yeah.
But that's
it's
just an ELM proper lifecycle management situation. But I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast and to this episode has at some point in their life made an unmanaged customization in production as a quick fix to whatever problem that's happening there. And then for sure forgot about it, even though they extensively documented it, but still forgot about it with the next release.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's realities. You can't always do this. So while blocking unmanaged customizations is a commendable thing and a good thing to do, there are exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, don't mention marketing to Malin.
Well, we talked about this before. Like the whole unmanaged toggle, in my opinion, is scream test by Microsoft because they do not know what of their own products are doing unmanaged stuff in production.
Yep.
So the toggle exists so that customers go yell at Microsoft that they're doing it wrong so they can fix it, which is also commendable in its way, but it is a scream test. It's basically, I toggle this switch and half of my stuff is broken. Oh, that's great. Malin and Vivian Voss reported that marketing is broken when the toggle is turned on. Great. Now we go into the learn documentation and we say, known issue, marketing. Customer journey insights, customer whatever the name of this product is broken. We will fix it at some point. Please do not toggle this switch. Yeah, this is how it goes. And this list has been growing. So it's just, this is just the way that they find it, I fear.
Yeah, it is marked as preview, this toggle. So yeah, I'm not sure I would recommend that to just toggle it on in production. So, yeah.
Are you confident then when they mark it general available that all of the issues will be resolved?
Oh, well, you go ahead first.
No, I'm not allowed to criticize anything. No, that's not true. But
you've done it for an hour now. So.
Exactly. No, the thing is, I have no clue. I don't know where this toggle is going. I like it, but my fear is that given how the list is growing and there are things popping up, it could take a long, long while before it is G8, or it goes GA with the known issues, or it never goes GA at all and it gets scrapped because of the challenges they have with their own implementations that will cost too much time and money to adjust. And yeah. I don't know. I have no clue how this...
No.
Where this will go.
I think it will stay in preview for a while. Yeah.
Microsoft time.
Yeah. Yeah, in the fullness of time.
In the fullness of time.
Yeah. All right. So what's the future for Dual Write from your point of view, Yannick?
Well, I think it will play a crucial role in the, like I said, in the...
Yeah.
In the timeline or in the whole future of FNO, bring it closer into Dataverse, because FNO is using SQL Server essentially in the backend. It's not Dataverse as their data store, and they want to bring FNO closer to Dataverse and tie it to a Dataverse environment and make it behave like an app, the way that sales and marketing and everything is also an app, a Dynamics 365 app. And while there is no, I don't have any knowledge about it. I don't have any NDA knowledge that I'm spilling because I don't know this. But my opinion, my feeling is that Dual Write and Virtual Tables will be a way of making it seem as if FNO is running on Dataverse, whereas it's still running on SQL Server, and it will take a while for a SQL Server to be taken out underneath of FNO, if it will ever happen. I don't know, but at least this technology with both Dual Write and Virtual Tables will play a crucial role in the beginning stages of having FNO act more and more as if it's a native Dataverse solution. So that's my opinion on that.
Yeah.
So it's not going away, I think. I hope. I invested so much time in it. It cannot go away now.
So where do I go if I want to learn more?
Well,
your blog?
No, it's too painful to blog about it. I'd say start with the documentation, which is not ideal, but at least it gives you a grasp of the concepts. And there is, I should find that, especially for Microsoft partners, there is a Yammer group that you can join for FNO, and it has a community around Dual Write, and it's super, super active. And this is the place where you go with all your questions. And all partners can join that. That was Karina Klaassen, I think,
yeah.
Another MVP that made me aware.
In Sweden, yeah.
Yeah, she made me aware of it. She's like, you're doing Dual Write and you're not in this Yammer group and you're struggling by yourself. Join this support group of people struggling together. And this is where you should be.
Yep.
Yammer, that's interesting. Well, what do you know?
Yes, that's what I thought. But it still exists.
Yeah, and for FNO, it's huge. Like, there's a community for HR as well.
I think it's probably the same FNO, Yammer external network thingy.
There can't be that many Yammer groups for FNO. It has to be the same.
So let me share that link with you so you can put it in the show notes. You'll have to request access and you'll have to do it with your corporate credentials, I believe. And then someone has to approve it. I don't know what the requirements are to enter it. I just logged in, requested access, and 3 days later I got in. So that's what it is. But you can ask all your Dual Write questions there. So it's the documentation, Dual Write questions in the Yammer group. And there are a couple of MVPs around, like me, Karina. I think Antti Payun has some experience with Dual Write as well. All of them will first say no, and then they will try and help you along.
Nice. Do you have any public speaking schedule, Yannick?
Any. I have a lot. I will be at Color Cloud next week, where I will be doing a session about DualWrite. It's called Architectural and Technological Considerations When Doing DualWrite Implementations, which is essentially a more structured version of my ranting of today. Then after that, I will go to the European Collaboration Summit in Wiesbaden, 13, 14, 15 of May. I'll be at Dynamics Minds in Porteros, Slovenia. I'll be at RESCO Next, their RESCO conference. And then a week after that, I'll be at European Power Platform Conference in Brussels. So that's before summer, which sounds a lot now that I'm mentioning all of them. Yes.
Yeah, it did sound like a lot. So who would you recommend as a future guest on this podcast?
Well, that's a challenging question again. I don't know. It's I'd recommend Mats Necker, I think. He's doing some interesting stuff with Color Cloud, where he's building a front-end website on top of Dataverse, model-driven app for all the speakers. So you could, and I saw that you don't haven't had him on before, and he probably likes to talk about it. He has done some sessions about it, and I think that could be a good guest on your next episode or one of your future episodes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Send us an link or invitation to him, an introduction, so we will get to know him. Yeah.
Pretty sure Malin knows Mats, so that will work out. But we'll attack him next week in Hamburg.
Yeah, I had a meeting with him yesterday evening. So I know he can also talk about custom connectors in customer insight journeys, which is something he does a lot now. So
yes, he has built something with, was it WhatsApp or SM? I don't know, something like that, right?
He does a lot of cool stuff. Mats. Yeah, really good. So if you don't know Mats, it's the tall guy with the pink or blue or different colored hair.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And he's an amazing developer and he figures out stuff. So yeah, could be fun to have him on and share what he has been building lately.
Thank you for your participation in CM Rocks, Yannick Reichmann.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for writing and thanks for an to hour.
I could do another hour if you want. Yeah. Let's find another topic. No. It has been fun. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thanks to your listening. And don't forget, you can find CM Rocks on... Yeah, where can they find us, Malin?
LinkedIn. We have our own LinkedIn page. You can find us on Facebook if you're doing social media. And you can find us on our website, crmrocks.com.
Yeah. See you next time on CM Rocks.